plate a potential nugget.
Just for us to be on the same page, Amy, could you define psychological safety the way
sure.
you see it?
I define it as an environment where people feel free to take interpersonal risks. And maybe I should clarify what an interpersonal risk is. That's anything that you might do or say that creates a risk that others might think less well of you. Right. So if I ask a question, you might think I'm stupid. If I offer an idea that you think is really a crazy idea, you might think I'm not in touch with reality. If I ask for help, you might think I'm weak, right? So all of those are in the category of interpersonal risks. And I would argue those are the interpersonal risks that good employees take every day, right? Because if you aren't doing, if you aren't offering ideas or asking questions or asking for help in a complex interdependent world, you're not doing your job.
Got it. Got it. And I came across psychological safety, when I was reading Charles Duhigg's article about Project Aristotle and Google. But you've been studying it for much longer.
Yes, much longer.
I'm curious. You use the term blogosphere to talk about sort of the street version of psychological safety. Which element of psychological safety do you find being underappreciated in sort of the public realm?
Well, probably the simplest way to talk about psychological safety is a sense of permission for candor, right? That one believes, the way you're candid with your spouse, or you're candid with your best friend, but with your boss, you might not be so candid. And yet, if you're in a psychologically safe and work environment, you just understand that the work is too important, the customers are too important, the purpose is too important to hold back for fear of not looking good. So I loved Charles Duhigg's article, right? It really put psychological safety on the map. And I think he's a wonderful writer. And I think he did justice to the study that was done at Google, Project Aristotle. So that did the field a big favor, I must say. And it led at least some people to, maybe they read too quickly, didn't read carefully, and they said, oh, they're talking about you just have to be nice. Oh, no, that's not right. Because being nice often means to people not saying what you really think, not saying something that might be perceived as not nice, even if it's the truth. And so there are many misconceptions out there like that.
One more misconception you talk about in the book, Amy, is psychological safety and trust, right? You say that psychological safety describes a temporally immediate experience, while trust describes an expectation about whether another person can be counted on to do something what they promise in a future moment. Can you talk a little bit about trust versus psychological safety?
Yeah, and this may be more of a semantic difference, a problematic difference, because I think trust is important, it's a very meaningful part of human experience, but it's not the same thing, because trust is fundamentally more cognitive. Trust is my willingness to put myself at risk because I'm confident that you'll do what you said you would do. Right. So, but trust is about my perception of your trustworthiness, if you will. Mm-hmm. Whereas psychological safety describes the environment in a group. I mean, it can refer to a group of just two, but psychological safety is fundamentally about whether I feel it's safe around here. Whereas trust is fundamentally, what do I think about you? Are you trustworthy versus am I safe?
If this topic is of interest, you might like the curated playlist on building trust. You can just go to playtopotential.com /tags, T-A-G-S, /building trust. This is B-U-I-L-D-I-N-G hyphen T-R-U-S-T. You might be specifically interested in a couple of nuggets there with Bill Campbell, the $1 trillion coach, who was anything but nice, but still ended up building significant trust and creating psychological safety with the people he worked with.
He, first and foremost, with anybody that he worked with, he established, you know, a really strong, we call it an envelope of trust. And I think that's critical for any coaching relationship. You know, people knew that when they were talking to Bill, that he had integrity, he would keep things in confidence, and he truly had the best wishes, the best interests of the person he was coaching in mind at all times. People knew that Bill had their back. Bill wanted what was best for them. That was his only agenda. And so it was because of that trust that he could continue to work with, you know, competitors like Apple and Google, even through the tensest of times, because everybody knew that they could truly trust him. And you know, I would think that most coaches don't work in such tense environments and such competitive environments, you know, working with two competitors like that. But still, this element of really building really strong trust with someone is a critical first step toward building a good coaching relationship.
Thank you for listening.